Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Wednesday. So glad to have you here. I'm Clayton Morris. Natalie is might be with us in a minute. We'll see. But you've got me right now, solo. So welcome into the big show on this Wednesday. This is the show where we seek the truth, no matter where it takes us. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hope everyone is doing well. Coming up on the big show on this Wednesday, we've got Putin versus NATO. So the big offensive looks like it's about to unfold between Vladimir Putin, the Russian army, and of course the rest of what's left of Ukraine. So there are a number of reports this afternoon about a mounting offensive. We're going to go through all of this. Former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter is going to be joining us to dive deeper into some of these big moves around NATO and what Henry Kissinger had to say about Ukraine joining NATO. So a lot of moving pieces on that this afternoon. Plus, we're going to look at Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. The governor of Florida has now dropped a bombshell and is moving pretty straightforward against Big Pharma and the biopharmaceutical complex. So we're going to be looking at that tonight. We're also going to be talking about Greta Thunberg, who, of course, was arrested in air quotes. But there's a larger question about, like, what are these elites trying to accomplish with their climate theater that is going on when all signs are pointing to a climate hoax? Seeing the Great Barrier Reef back in full force. The polar bears are back. So there's all of this talk, of course, about emissions and getting to net carbon zero. But what will that actually do to the average human beings, people that, you know, need fossil fuels, need hydrocarbons to live their lives while these elites can fly around in private jets? So we'll dive deeper into that. We've got a special guest on that. So all of that and more on this Wednesday as Redacted starts right now. Rob Thompson in our chat says, Greta, not arrested, just carried around for fun. Yeah. Well, it was like how the mainstream media plays that story, of course, which is like, Greta Thunberg, climate activist, arrested at a coal mine. Really? No, okay. We'll show you the videotape. You be the judge of that arrest and see how well it went, that photo opportunity. But we've got a very busy show for you. Thank you guys all for subscribing, being a part of our great community here. You know, there's been a lot of discussion over the past 24 hours about independent media and how independent they really are. And Steven Crowder, of course, talking about some of those, I don't know, conservative media networks, I guess, that, you know, it's funny. I kind of operate outside of that stuff. I don't really pay much attention to all of that. And since I left the mainstream media a number of years ago, I don't answer to anybody. We don't answer to any of these billionaires. We have no big media partnerships with anybody. So it's kind of funny. It's very odd. I'm blessed that we get to do this show with your support by you subscribing and being a part of our community here. We know we do this show for you. And if you weren't here, then we wouldn't do the show. It's that simple. But it's been interesting. And so, again, thank you for supporting independent journalism. Thank you for subscribing, whether on YouTube or Rumble, and being a part of our great community. We also have a free daily newsletter that was a little bit late today, and I apologize for that. We had a server issue. It's a free newsletter, but so many of you wrote to us today and said, hey, I usually start my morning with your newsletter. Where is it? I'm having my cup of coffee. Where is it? So we apologize. There was a server issue, and it got hung up and didn't send out like it should have. So it was about 2.5 hours to 3 hours late, so I apologize. But anyway, it is free. It's a lot of fun. You can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee just by signing up. Go to redacted.inc is the place to go, redacted.inc. Put in your email address, and you'll receive a welcome email. And when you get that welcome email, you just need to verify it. And then tomorrow morning, we hope, at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time is usually when we try to publish the newsletter. So if you're in Australia, then I guess you're reading it late at night. But nevertheless, you'll have it when you can, when you want to enjoy it. So again, redacted.inc is the place to go. We also have a community. So you can support independent journalism by going to the community button there on redacted.inc. And for the price of a cup of coffee, you can support what we do here. We have exclusive content that is released to you privately. So just for the community. And you, if you're on Rumble, you can click that big red join button, and that's how you can join our locals community. Again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism so that we don't have to answer to any of those billionaires. Again, redacted.inc. Well, the war in Ukraine is taking center stage at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. A lot of big news emerging over the past 24 hours, the first of which is 99-year-old Henry Kissinger. They rolled him out on stage, and he now says that Ukraine should join NATO. That's, of course, a big flip-flop on his previous position that Ukraine should negotiate peace and give up land, give up the Donbass. Well, that's concerning. And then we heard from Finland's prime minister that Putin is irrelevant, and the only way for this to end is for Ukraine to win and also retake land. Listen.
We don't know when the war will end, but we have to make sure that it will end. Ukrainians win. I don't think that there's any other choice. If Russia would win the war, then we would only see decades of this kind of behavior ahead of us. I think other countries are looking very closely at what is happening now in Ukraine. And if Russia would win, then it would send a message that you can invade another country, you can attack another country, and you can gain from that.
So if that's not enough, they seem to be on the same page that Ukraine has to retake its land here, all of these elites. The United States and its allies are set to increase the amount of weapons that we're sending to Ukraine. Joining us now is former UN weapons inspector, United States, and former U.S. Marine Scott Ritter. Scott, welcome back to the show. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with NATO. Let's start with that point from Henry Kissinger, who a lot of people made a lot of noise about 7 months ago, when he came out and said, no, like, they should negotiate peace, give up 20% of their land, be done with it, because otherwise they'll be basically eliminated as a country. Why the flip-flop, do you think, on this major point?
Well, I think only Henry Kissinger can answer that question fully, but we need to understand that, you know, he is the name attached to a major business, Kissinger and Associates, which provides advisory and analysis support to big clients, including governments and businesses, et cetera. You know, there's an old adage in the military that I always was reminded of when I was standing in front of senior officers explaining why what I did was right. They said, Ritter, when you're explaining, you're losing. And, you know, Kissinger made a statement 8 months ago that was closer to being right than wrong, that Ukraine can never be a member of NATO, that process is inherently destabilizing. But the end result was a backlash that I believe hit the bottom line of his core business and business interests. Where he's speaking at the World Economic Forum, so the, you know, it's the bottom line that that matters. And for Henry Kissinger, you know, he's no longer in the business of directly impacting national security. He's not the national security advisor. He's not the Secretary of State. He's a former, who has significant baggage. I mean, there's a significant part of the world that reviles this man, condemns him as a war criminal, et cetera. So his existence is contingent upon his ability to continue to attract attention from the establishment. And his statements that were made last summer put him at odds with the establishment. So I think, you know, because this is incoherent. I mean, to be frank, his statement is fundamentally incoherent. It makes no sense, except when seen in the larger context of similar incoherence coming out of Europe, NATO, and the United States about this conflict in Ukraine. So he, rather than being right, has opted to be wrong, but be wrong in the right way when it comes to his economic interests. I don't think there's any real, you know, analytical gift being brought here. This is pure selfish economic interests.
Right. And he's absolutely in line with the other globalists and the other elites who were speaking at Davos. We heard from Ursula von der Leyen also coming out saying that we need to support Ukraine as much as possible, throw as much money and weapons there. The United States also echoing those sentiments over the past 24 hours. And then you have the Finnish prime minister also saying the very same thing. Your response to what she said about Putin is now irrelevant, and that Ukraine needs to retake its land, and that's the only way that this ends.
I don't mean to be too cute here, too flippant, but there's really no other response, because they're not serious people. I mean, they hold serious positions, but what they're saying is so far removed from reality, so far detached from what's actually going on and what's actually going to happen, that you have no choice but to, get a little cute when they respond. What's happening here is a gathering of the Titanic captain and crew after they hit the iceberg, saying the iceberg is not relevant. We're going to make it to New York, all speed ahead. Meanwhile, water's coming in, the ship's sinking, and they're just saying, nope, keep on going. That iceberg is irrelevant. No, I'm sorry, crew. The iceberg done won. And I'm sorry for all the people in Davos. Russia done won. It's game, set, match. Now, you can prolong the suffering of Ukraine, and that's all that's happening right now. The goal of, that was stated by Lloyd Austin and others last April, May, that the goal, and they were sort of honest back then, the goal wasn't for Ukraine to win. The goal was to inflict pain on Russia. I mean, right, that alone should have caused every Ukrainian to go, what, wait a minute? It's just another bit of irony. I was singled out by the Center for Countering Disinformation, Zelensky's private little intellectual hit unit, for being an international terrorist and a war criminal and a Russian propagandist, for daring to say what I say. The number one thing that I was accused of was, they listed three main things, but the first one was that I had the gall to say that this was a proxy conflict between NATO and Russia. Well, the Ukrainian defense minister just came out and said the exact same thing. So I'm looking forward to his name appearing next to mine, just like I'm looking forward to, I don't have to look forward. It is Arestovich, the former advisor to Zelensky, is now on the Miratorov's hit list. So he and I are now partners. Me and the defense minister are partners. It seems that everybody's gravitating towards the stance that I've taken, and they're all appearing on the same list. But, besides being cute and coy about this, the point is, this has always been a proxy conflict. It has never been about Ukraine winning. So why are people suddenly now at this late stage in the game trying to convince people that there's a new reality, a new outcome, a new direction being taken policy-wise, when the truth is this is a proxy conflict between NATO and Ukraine, or NATO and Russia, where the Ukrainians will pay the price. NATO and in the United States are prepared to sacrifice the Ukrainian nation and the Ukrainian state for the sole objective of weakening Russia, and they have failed. They have failed economically. Russia, 28% growth in its, in the income derived from energy. They were looking at, they were expecting, 15% drop in GDP, 2% drop. Remember, the entire Western world that Russia was fundamentally linked to has sanctioned Russia, broke Russia off. This should have been a precipitous collapse in the Russian economy. Instead, a 2% reduction in GDP, 28% growth in the income derived from energy sales. Inflation is literally a third of that of Europe, the Russian economy is firing on all cylinders going forward, not just firing on all cylinders, but firing all on cylinders in a way that not only sustains civilian economic growth, but they've expanded defense industry production. They are on a wartime footing right now, not only to sustain and support the special military operation, but to grow the Russian military over the next 3 years to 1.5 million men, primarily through contract services, professional soldiers, an increase in divisions, 10 division equivalents, being created, whole new army formations, et cetera. Meanwhile, NATO is still struggling whether or not they can get those pathetic battalion-sized battle groups in the Baltics up to brigade strength. They don't have the funding for it. They don't have the decision making. Russia is so far ahead of them in terms of strategic thinking And we haven't even gotten to what's going on in the SMO. 300,000 troops finalizing their mobilization, equipped with the most modern equipment, ready to go right now on the battlefield. Meanwhile, what? England is celebrating that they made the courageous decision to provide 14 Challenger 2 tanks, and they're now talking about bringing in Warrior armored vehicles to work side by side with Bradley infantry fighting vehicles, as if technology makes a thing. At the end of the day, it's the quality of the soldier, the quality of the soldier's training, the quality of the leadership, the quality of the staff planning. Russia owns all of those, you know, sectors. The Ukrainians are a defeated nation, a defeated military. That's the ultimate outcome, and nothing anybody says at Davos is going to change.
Well said, well said. And, you know, we've seen a couple of major moves over the past few days, obviously in the near the city of Bakhmut and the city of Soledar being collapsing now to Russian forces. Ukrainian volunteer soldiers coming out in interviews with the Times admitting that they were unprepared to fight the Russians. They said, we had a few Kalashnikov rifles and a few grenades and that was it. We didn't have anything. We didn't have night vision goggles. We are not prepared to fight the Russians. And then, of course, you have this other report from CNN confirming what you had just said, which is that basically Ukraine is being used as a testing ground for weapons. Like, that's essentially what Ukraine is now. It's just a testing ground where these military industrial complex can now test these weapons against Russia. Is that really what the future of Ukraine is going to be? Basically one large testing ground?
No, that might be the present status of Ukraine. The future of Ukraine has been one large graveyard. I don't mean to be too grim here. This war's over. It's over. I mean, the only thing that's left is death and destruction. But, you know, this is the equivalent. I keep trying to tell people, you know, they're like, well, the war's not over. It's going to go on for a long time. Hey, dude, any analyst worth his or her salt would have told you in March 1943, after the fall of Stalingrad, that the momentum had permanently shifted over to the Soviet Union. But even if you had doubts about that, from September 44, after the Battle of Kursk, we now know that the Soviet Union is going to win. There's nearly another year's worth of fighting ahead, but there's no doubt about it. It's the same thing in, you know, once the Allied forces ensconce themselves in Normandy, it's over. Germany can't win. There's still fighting to go. We're at the stage in the conflict right now where any strategic thinker worth his or her salt is looking at all the data, all the statistics, and realizing there's nothing that can be done to salvage Ukraine. Its economy is toast. Understand that. There is zero economic growth in Ukraine. It's all diminished. Its power, its infrastructure, gone. Even if the war stopped today, Ukraine is a hopeless train wreck that will continue to crash through in the next year. This winter isn't the one Ukraine needs to worry about. It's next winter when everything shuts down. There is nothing left. So with no economy, so Ukraine is living on the largesse of the West. We keep them alive by pumping money in. I'm not talking about the military. I'm talking about the economy. And at some point in time, when Europe's economy starts to collapse on its own right, how can they continue to fund this? Is the United States, with a new Republican Congress, going to continue to throw tens of billions of dollars away when there's hurricane survivors down in Florida begging for assistance? When California's going through, you know, flooding and storms right now that's going to need assistance, what are the American people going to say? Enough is enough. We aren't giving this failed regime any more money. It's all over but the shouting. Unfortunately, Ukraine has significant manpower resources that can continue to be mobilized and thrown into service, just like Nazi Germany did in the end, mobilizing the children and the old men. They kept up a fight for months longer than the war should have been fought. That's where Ukraine is right now. And it doesn't matter how much so-called equipment. I mean, what is CNN thinking? I mean, really, CNN, a testing ground for what? The Patriot? We know about the Patriot. It failed in 1991. It failed in 2003. And it failed recently in Saudi Arabia. It can't protect Saudi critical infrastructure from Houthi drone attacks. And suddenly solved all the problems. And we're going to take Ukrainian soldiers, train them in 5 months, and they become miraculous practitioners of air defense warfare with a weapon system they've never dealt with. No. We're going to give them the Challenger 2 tank. Let's say it is the tank touched by God. It is perfection of armor. It's not, by the way. But let's just say it is. 14? 14 Challenger 2 tanks you're going to throw into the largest land combat scenario the world's seen since World War II, and they will have the life expectancy of nothing. They'll all be destroyed because 14 tanks in isolation means nothing. Oh, we're going to give them Bradleys and this. No, Zaluzhny said he needed 300 tanks, 500 infantry fighting vehicles, 500 artillery pieces, unlimited supply of ammunition. He's not getting anywhere close to this, and what he's getting are pieces of equipment that are from disparate sources. They all have unique maintenance problems, which creates sustainability issues. We're actually making Ukraine weaker by providing them this equipment than we would be if we just continued to provide them the old Soviet equipment that they know how to use. They know how to. Problem is, there's no more Soviet equipment because we gave it to them all, and the Russians have destroyed it. The Russians are going to destroy this equipment too. Is it going to be cheap for Russia? No. They're going to suffer losses, but Russia will win.
That is the headline right there. We are making Ukraine weaker by giving them all of this disparate crap right now. Wow. I haven't thought of it in those terms, but that's why we have you on the show. And, you know, again, these globalists who continue to drive this country into oblivion are just, you know, lining their pockets, making themselves wealthier. And as Russia said yesterday, it doesn't matter what you call these tanks. You want to call them tanks. You want to call them Bradley fighting vehicles. You want to call them Challenger. It doesn't matter what they are. The Russians said yesterday they all burn the same. And
they're going to burn.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Scott Ritter, always great to have you here on the show. Where can people follow? I know you've got stuff that you're doing on YouTube, of course, doing great content there as well. You're back on Twitter. Hallelujah. Where can people follow you?
Oh, I got kicked off of Twitter within 24 hours.
Oh.
Crime unknown. I have a website. It's scottritterextra.com. And anything I write or any show that I've been on, for instance, when you send me a link, I'll go ahead and post it there so people can follow everything I'm doing there. And there's no paywall, so welcome to everybody. If you want to support, there's a mechanism to do that through Substack, but I don't, you know, maybe someday I'll learn how to monetize things. But for the moment, I'm still in the program that if you ask the question, I owe you an answer. So I'll do that. But as you know, nothing happens for free and bills have to be paid. So anything, if people like it and they feel like they want to support it, there's a mechanism to do that too. But until then, it's free.
Well, we've got a large audience here. So our audience loves having you on. Please go support what Scott does, his great reporting, his great analysis. Go to scottritterextra.com and support through a Substack and subscribe. We'll have links to your work in our description below as well. So Scott, great to see you. Happy New Year to you. Thanks so much for your analysis and joining us here on the show.
Well, thank you very much and Happy New Year to you and good luck going forward. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Man, I'm blown away. That to me is one of the most important points I've heard, maybe throughout this entire conflict, what he just said.
Well, the part about we're making them weaker by giving them disparate equipment that they don't know how to use. Well, and then we saw evidence of that over the weekend with the Dnieper apartment bombing, which now Russia is saying they should never have had anti-military craft in civilian areas. Now, neither side has been able to corroborate this, but, you know, we continue to see evidence of people getting hurt by using equipment they don't know how to use. This is not just like sending somebody a toaster and saying, they'll probably figure it out and not die.
Well, I mean, even our toaster is hard to use. Like, I try to use our toaster on a regular basis, and I still don't know what some of the buttons do on that thing.
Can you imagine? I hate that steaming mechanism.
I know, the steaming mechanism. Can you imagine getting, like Patriot missile batteries that you have like a year of training at least to be up in the, and they're just like sending all this random equipment, but we are, to his point, making them weaker by giving them all of this stuff, demanding the manpower that they don't have. I don't know. I think it's a remarkable statement. So our thanks to Scott for that. Really, really, really interesting.
Well, we're going to turn now to the fight in Florida against Big Pharma. That was a bit of an alliteration.
Flight in Florida about
the
big
fight
pharma.
In Florida about pharma, even though the last P is a PH. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Scoremaster. You know, charging higher interest is how banks make more money, and they make a lot more of your hard-earned money. If your credit score is just okay or meh, but not great. You need your credit score to be great. That's why ScoreMaster is the new science in accelerating credit scores, and they put you in control of your money, not the bank. So say your credit is 650 and you're borrowing about 500 grand on a refinance on your home. Well, if you start at ScoreMaster, that could save you over $75,000 in interest over the life of your loan, plus time. It will save you a lot more time as well. That's time that you're not paying a mortgage. That 75 grand is yours, not the bank's. And that's the genius behind ScoreMaster's 3-week rule, especially now with soaring interest rates. We know now today, did you know Jerome Powell has COVID? He
again?
Tested positive for COVID. Oh, I didn't know he had already had it.
I'm sure they
And he
all
says
have.
He's working from home. So he's probably working really hard on figuring out how high to raise those interest rates. So you need to get in on making sure that your credit score is ready to apply for any loan, any auto lease, or any credit. You start at ScoreMaster. Just visit scoremaster.com/redacted for your special 7-day trial. Again, your 7-day trial is waiting for you at scoremaster.com/redacted.
So we've got a lot more news to get to here on this Wednesday. We're going to be looking at the very latest in Florida. Governor DeSantis there going after the biopharmaceutical complex. We're also going to be looking at Greta and her quote-unquote arrest, Greta Thunberg, and the climate activists. Ralph Schulhammer is going to be joining us to dive into the elite, the bourgeoisie. But first, I guess, let's go down to Florida, the Sunshine State.
Right. Well, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced new legislation that would prohibit what he calls coercive biomedical policies. That's a nice way to put it. I kind of had to think about that for a second. Well, what does that mean? It means they can't stop you from doing something if you're not participating in what Michael Schellenberger calls COVIDism. And I kind of like that term. COVIDism, meaning you're all in on getting all the vaccines and making sure everyone else does and telling everybody to wear a mask and, you know, being upset if people are not still behaving as if we're in the midst of the pandemic. Well, if you're not doing those things in some parts of the world, they still are punishing people, but no longer in Florida. DeSantis' bill is called Prescribe Freedom. Here's a summary of it. It says that it will prohibit permanently prohibit COVID-19 mask requirements throughout the state. It will permanently prohibit COVID-19 vaccine mask requirements in all schools. It will also permanently prohibit COVID-19 vaccine passports in Florida, and also permanently prohibit employers from hiring or firing based on mRNA jabs. Okay, more of that down below. It also will prohibit discrimination based on COVID-19 vaccination status, remove two-tiered test and mask discrimination, and protect medical freedom for medical professionals, protect the rights to disagree with the preferred narrative of the medical community, and protect the religious views of medical professionals. Now, that's really interesting when you just oppose it with California, which late last year passed the California Assembly Bill 2098, where doctors now can lose their license for saying anything that is deemed COVID misinformation. Well, of course, how do we define that? Here is the assembly bill. It says that if you disseminate misinformation or disinformation as a physician related to COVID-19, including false or misleading, now misleading is something they can really hang something on here, right? Then that shall constitute unprofessional conduct, and they can take your license if you're a doctor. So let's imagine these two hypothetical scenarios. Two elderly people, mm-hmm. both living in Sunshine States, both have a history of stroke due to blood clots.
Okay.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In Florida, that person goes to their doctor and says, hey, would you like to talk about getting vaccinated for COVID or getting a booster or what have you? And the doctor can say, well, there's new data showing certain risks. Right? Would you like to explore said risks? And that person is free to explore those risks with their doctor. In California, however, a doctor may not want to present the patient with this risk factor. They may worry that, you know, the CDC rules are still a certain way, and they will no longer have this discussion. Right?
And
which sunny state would you like to live in if you are an elderly person? With a risk of, you don't even have to be elderly, if you are just a person with a risk of stroke due to blood clots.
Right. Well, would you get fired? I mean, in California, we've certainly heard of that happening. because of these laws, hospitals firing doctors for not adhering to hospital policy on COVID and CDC on CDC policy.
Right.
And they've lost their jobs for it.
Well, in California, given the fact that the CDC concluded with their investigation, which I encourage you to seek out our report on Rumble on said investigation, which is now, this is how you do an investigation, is you write a press release, that the CDC has concluded that there's no risks for, even though there was one of their reporting systems that flagged a risk, but are you allowed to say that? Who knows? And what doctor in California wants to risk their license for bringing this up? And so what? Then you just, you know, what? So again, which sunny state are you going to choose if, well, if you'd like a real, real choice from your doctor?
Is for future, this sets a precedent for these doctors. It's like, okay, so this is one thing that they're doing that with. And now, okay, now there's going to be another thing that pharma releases. And they're like, okay, now we can't say anything negative about that too. So this is another one we're going to add that you can lose your license. They're taking away a doctor's freedom to be a doctor.
Right.
Yes. And make autonomous decisions that are in the interest of their patients. Absolutely right.
Right. If they have to look over their shoulder, then they can't be, they can't be free. They can, I think like House, like the TV show House, like he could like think outside the box to find a solution for what ails you, right? And we want doctors like that to really, we hear hero stories all the time about doctors, right? I mean, who thought outside the box, they were able to prescribe something and figure something out and save a person's life. And then became like, now they found new treatment that was able to save lots of people's lives because they were able to do that.
Right. I had a doctor like that actually, because I had spinal meningitis when I was a child, and
which is like a death sentence.
Yes. And the doctor treated it before the tests were in because he felt like he couldn't wait. And my dad even said, why did you do that when you didn't know? And he's in those hours did save my life.
Wow.
And he said, I looked in her eyes and there was no one home. And she used to be a really like responsive baby. And so he just knew like he, so yes, I have benefited from a doctor just like that.
Yeah.
Dr. Hoagland, who I think is retired in the East Bay area.
Well, then you have people like Dr. Peter McCullough who did the same, right? And were able to come up with and prescribe treatments that saved people's lives, but then they were marginalized, cast out, and lost their jobs as a result of doing that.
Yes.
Tragically.
So DeSantis' new bill is set in place in order to protect doctors to make decisions like this, autonomous decisions. And it will have to pass Congress in Florida, but we can pretty much assume it will, because in 2021, he had no problem passing a similar law regarding COVID mandates in the workplace. Now, here's a summary of that bill signed into law in November of 2021. And actually, now that you look back and we're, you know, over a year past this time frame, November 2021, history has been good to this document. In November of 2021, this was panned as a crazy thing to do, which was prohibit vaccine mandates. Employers who violate employee health protections would be fined. Government entities may not require vaccines. This was, you know, again, a lot of people called Ron DeSantis crazy for doing these things, but none of these measures have proven to actually stop the spread of COVID. So turns out he was, it was quite a logical thing to do. Here is DeSantis on Tuesday discussing how he consistently pushed back against lawmakers who wanted to push COVIDism in Florida.
But I'll tell you, being the free state of Florida did not happen by accident, because it required us over these last few years to stand against major institutions in our society, the bureaucracy, the medical establishment, legacy media, and even the President of the United States. Who together were working to impose a biomedical security state on society. They sought to marginalize people who declined COVID jabs by using things like vaccine passports. They sought to prevent people from being able to earn a living if they declined the jab through the Biden employer mandate. They sought to deny children an education if their parents did not want their kids to get mRNA shots. They start to discriminate against Americans based on vax status by treating them different in their own workplaces. They sought to impose masking requirements on everyone from spectators at sporting events to young school children. And they sought to silence medical practitioners who followed the evidence and backed the science over the narrative. And the fact of the matter is, they had a lot of momentum. They brought a lot of power to these fights. And they would have won, except for the fact Florida said no.
Yeah, he's right. I mean, a lot of those things early in the pandemic.
Wait. What is he right about? Because there's a lot of revisionist history going along lately about DeSantis. And I want to be, we have no dog in this hunt, but we want to be fair and follow the truth. So we're not going to revise history. I'm anti-revisionist history.
Okay, you're right, because he was responsible for a major vaccine
lockdown.
Rollout. Yeah. And I wouldn't say that was a major lockdown. Florida had a
sure. I mean, gyms, pastors, schools. I mean, there were lockdowns. And, you know, people forget, like, Trump let lockdowns up to the states. And they could have had exemptions. Like, DeSantis could have said, Mr. President, Mr. Trump, we're going to stay wide open.
But Florida went back to school before most places.
They did. I think Georgia ended lockdowns first. So mm-hmm. people were saying, oh, DeSantis ended it before everyone else. I believe, if I'm not mistaken on my dates on this.
Yes.
Georgia ended it first.
I don't think I'm giving him credit for more than history is allowing. I'm just saying that when you look at this document from November of 2021, and already he was repealing vaccine mandates when vaccine mandates were just getting started in mid 2021, really just picking up steam in order to send kids back to school in the fall, for him to have been able to pass this law, which now history is kind to, is something. So yes, maybe he's taking credit for more than he did at the time.
We watch this? Here's an example of this, just so we can. Oh, no, didn't take it. Sorry, guys, didn't take my.
Give me a second.
Yeah, here's an example of. We're gonna get the video up here in a second, but this is where he was ordering all Floridians on actions on this. This was specifically. Just let me know when we're good to go. There we go. All right, and there we go.
You know, at this point, I think even though
there's
a lot of places in Florida that have very low infection rates, it makes sense to make this move now. And, you know, I did consult with folks in the White House. I did speak with the president about it. He agreed with the approach of focusing on the hot spots. But at the same time, you know, he understood that this is another 30-day situation and you got to just do what makes the most sense. So that order will be coming out momentarily. It will go into effect tomorrow night at midnight. You know, at this point, I think even though.
So just a few examples of some of these orders being put in place. There's been a lot of on social media over the past 24 hours, people saying like, there was never any lockdown. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, no, we need to be fair about this. What actually happened in history will show that they, of course, then pulled back and now really going full force to say that we were lied to about a lot of what we were hearing from these medical professionals in the biopharmaceutical complex. So that's fair, where
yes.
You still have a lot of mandates in place even after we know this data. That's the most troubling thing. So you have government mandates, you have business mandates in other areas, and you have states like Governor DeSantis and governors of Florida saying, wait a second, all of this is now showing that we should be doing the opposite of this.
Yeah, and I brought some charts to sort of compare, if you'd like to. We can get to that in a second. Because he may be able to say, based on the grand jury that just approved a board to discover how Big Pharma helped implement these rules in the first place in Florida, because he may be able to say, look, they lied to me. They told me these things. I thought they were true and I bought it. And so I put these laws in place in Florida. And so now this investigation may show exactly who told who what, and that may give him a tree to bark up, a leg mm-hmm. to stand on, I don't know, a cane to stand up. I don't know what the metaphor
would be. A rope to piss up?
Sure, yeah.
A rope to piss up.
A pot to be black. I don't know. Uh-huh. But it may give him an excuse to say, I went along with COVIDism to a point because of these data points that were presented to me, and then I later found out this, right? And then the hiring of Joe Ladapo, or Ladapo, the Surgeon General in Florida, came early on in the pandemic, but after it had really got started. So it proves that he was seeking out alternative voices all along. And so that may be, I'm not trying to promote DeSantis. We're just trying to watch what he's doing because he takes so much flack in the media for doing it. But at the same time, these anti-discriminatory practices now have been shown, they don't stop the spread. They don't really do anything.
Right.
Making people wear masks, not allowing people to go to
Do a lot, though, right? They have a lot of negatives.
Right.
Well, we know what it does to children.
Yeah.
We know what it does to populations. We know what it does to actually, hurting natural immunity.
Yes.
Right, actually getting the flu, as we would say, right, and being able to metabolize that naturally, it does a lot to protect you from not getting that.
Yeah. So you brought an angry tweet.
Yeah. This is Jordan Zakarian, who's a reporter, said this about Governor DeSantis. So there's some angry people here. More people have died of COVID in Florida than in New York, Pennsylvania, and all but two other states, he writes. This despite not suffering a wave at the beginning when vaccines weren't available. Only a sicko is fine sacrificing tens of thousands of lives for a doomed presidential bid. Basically saying we won't do any of these lockdowns and so people just die.
Right. So it's true that that Florida still has high COVID deaths. And we talked about recently how a doctor on CNN is now saying that COVID deaths may be overreported. So let's put a pin in that.
Yeah. For instance, in Florida, just this, we found out like a motorcycle accident, right? This person was in a motorcycle accident dying and they had COVID, right? So he died of COVID. Like that's how they measure these things, right?
Right.
Forget the motorcycle accident.
He died of COVID. And so I think what this guy is saying that he should not be repealing vaccine mandates and mask mandates because people are dying in Florida. Well, let's sort of juxtapose Florida's death rate with states that did have stricter mask mandates, stricter lockdowns, and stricter vaccine mandates as well. So let's look at Florida versus New York.
Well, people in the chat are saying, yeah, like look at New York's way worse.
Yeah. And so look at the death rate in New York is on par with Florida. Just, I think it's about 10,000 less or something like that, despite being a much smaller state geographically. But if you look at the spike rate, right, these are just death rates that, yes, New York had early in the pandemic death spike and then sort of flattened the curve. So you might be able to make these are deaths, right? And this Florida death spike was in September of 2021 and then seems to have flattened out. So New York may be a case that like, oh, if you're strict with COVID, then you get the result you want. But New Jersey is not really. Look at New Jersey. Early spike and then some more spikes. And then a big spike around the same time as Florida in the fall of 2021, and then sort of leveled out again, sort of like Florida. Look at Pennsylvania. You know, these things don't seem to go along with mask mandates, lockdowns, and vaccine mandates. They just sort of have their natural spikes and then all seem to be getting around to the same thing, just petering out towards the end of 2022. California, which had strict lockdowns, strict vaccine mandates, again, you know, early spike, and then Florida has its spike later, but all of them are sort of, and so it doesn't seem to make a case that mandates are what is getting out of the pandemic. So I'm not sure what that tweet would otherwise have him do is leave mandates in place when we know that vaccine mandates have nothing to do with the spread rate.
Right. And by the way, when did Florida, I mean, no one ever dies in Florida, right?
What do you mean?
Like, I'm just being facetious, right? But look, it's an elderly population, a very large elderly population,
yeah,
right? You move to Florida from New York because you're going to live out your days there, and that's where you're going to pass away, right? That's what happens in Florida.
I guess
FYI.
So. FYI. My stepmom said that you see a lot of people like ghost cars, because it's like little old ladies who you can't see them.
Oh, like I lived in Orlando, like driving down I-4. Like, you better watch out. Like, love my Orlando friends, but my God, be careful. Like, be careful on I-4, because you never know what's going to happen, you know? And I was friends with people that worked in the medical establishment down there, and it was, it could be scary. So, yes, people were dying in Florida all the time, and you have a disproportionately high elderly population. When they get the flu, right, that's maybe going to have some problems, especially if they're 85 years old, 82 years old, and they've had other, you know, other ailments and so forth.
Yes.
So that's going to happen. And then people can point to South Dakota and say, you know, Kristi Noem didn't lock down South Dakota. And, you can't really compare the populations. You know, one state is not the same as the other when it comes to this stuff. So I don't know. I think, and some, obviously these death numbers have been widely skewed as well. And of course, the deaths we knew in New York were widely skewed under Cuomo. So there was a lot of garbage going on.
Yeah, it's just hard to look at these charts and say, okay, that's because of a vaccine, or that's because of school closures, or that's because... You know, there are so many things to interpret here. So I hate to tell you this, but a 180 character tweet is not the place to parse out the nuance of COVIDism,
right,
and lockdowns and legislation. So that doesn't work.
Well, someone,
that's why we have a show. This is how I don't get banned from Twitter, is I don't instigate and provoke with people on Twitter.
Well, that's because I only really do it here.
Yeah. I instigate and provoke on this platform only, and then personally in my personal life.
Well, someone was provoking me in our chat just a moment ago.
What did they tell you? That's a bad move.
White Goodman says, redacted is living in 2020. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that, redacted.
Why do you care about that?
I don't know. I don't know what he means, like, redacted is living in 2020, because we're not sitting here apologizing for anything that happened in 2020 or acting as if the policies of 2020 are okay at all. I mean, I watched my dad die as a result of these policies. So you're not going to tell me that we're living in 2020.
Maybe they mean our clothes are out of fashion, which is less offensive to me.
What is?
Maybe they mean our clothes are out of fashion.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah, look at David's shirt.
Well, he's 1967.
So.
No, but I was going to say, I think like the data that we're showing shows that this, like, the point is that they're still promoting it like it's 2020. They're still promoting all of the same things they were promoting back then, now. And Florida's like, we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah. So redacted is not living in 2020.
No.
We're doing a whole story right now on DeSantis sticking it to the biopharmaceutical complex. And by the way, impaneling a grand jury investigation to go after these liars. So we're celebrating that. We're celebrating having these people answer these questions that need to be hauled before a jury and hear these depositions. So
yes, somebody today sent me, replied me on Twitter of some Albert Bourla being followed around at Davos. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, yeah.
By Rebel News, saying, uh-huh, we were owed some answers. When did you know this, that, and the other? And he keeps saying, have a good day. And he's like, I'm not going to. We're walking together on the street. I don't think that's how we're going to get the answers, but I appreciate all efforts towards getting answers.
Oh, man. Well, World Economic Forum. We're going to have much more coverage on the World Economic Forum a little bit later in the show. Plus, tomorrow we're going to do a deep dive on a number of these panels, because there's been just so much information coming out from the World Economic Forum. We're going to be joined on that tomorrow here on the show. So we've got more news to get to here on this Wednesday. We are going to talk about these globalists and Greta Thunberg being arrested. Was it a staged bunch of theater around climate? And we got a special guest on that. We're also going to look at these gas stoves, because the World Economic Forum, we now know, is perhaps one of the big partners behind this move to eliminate gas stoves from your life. The World Economic Forum doing the things, once again, to make the average people suffer while they can fly around in their private jets. But first, it's no secret right now, if you've tuned into this show, you know, experts are predicting a recession headed our way. Layoffs rolling are already happening, and the government ready to print more money. That's why we're looking at gold right now, and further devaluing the U.S. dollar by having gold or silver as a hedge against the declining paper currencies, these fiat currencies. That is one of the smartest plays you can make right now. Last year was terrible for most investors. 2023 could even be worse. That is unless you were smart and invested in gold. Then you were protected from loss while other investments fell. If the experts are right and we get hit with a recession, 2023 is looking even better for gold and silver investors. And I look at gold and silver as not a huge wealth building mechanism, like the idea that you're going to get wildly rich from it. No, maybe it'll go up nicely and maybe go up, you know, 5, 10, 20%, who knows? But the idea is wealth preservation, because when you have a US dollar in your bank account, you're losing money every day. That dollar loses value every day it's in your bank account because of inflation. So if you're interested in investing in gold, then the folks at Lear Capital will help you. Start purchasing precious metals right now or converting part of your IRA or your 401k into gold and silver IRA. Call Lear Capital today at 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. There are a lot of gold companies to choose from, and Lear Capital has over 25 years experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and a risk-free guarantee. It gives you 24 hours to review the purchase before committing to it. Lear Capital is a top choice when buying gold and silver. So call that number on the screen right there if you're interested. 1-800-613-3557 to get your free gold kit. Or go to LearRedacted.com to get your free gold and silver investor's guide and receive up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. Again, that's LearRedacted.com. What are these climate elites doing to all of us? Are we watching climate elites putting on theater in order to drive their personal agenda? Well, yesterday, climate activist Greta Thunberg showed up at a coal mine in Germany to protest the coal mines being put into production. She was doing this because Germany recently shut down most of its nuclear power plants in a bonehead move. So they're now turning to coal, of course. It makes no sense at all. And she's right about that. But video emerged showing Greta being dragged off by police, and she was quote-unquote arrested. And then the mainstream media ran that version of the story. Oh my God, she was arrested. She's a martyr. But then a short time later, behind-the-scenes video emerged showing Greta taking photos with police. So was the whole thing staged. You be the judge. Ralph Schulhammer, though, is an academic researcher, and he's just written an excellent new article in Newsweek titled "Climate Activism Isn't About the Planet. It's About the Boredom of the Bourgeoisie," those elites, the ruling class. So Ralph is the perfect person to talk to about all of this. Perfect timing. You published this piece, Ralph, and literally in the same afternoon, Greta Thunberg is arrested. First of all, your response to seeing that happen, that theater unfold.
No, I think it kind of reinforces what you just said and what I also tried to bring across in my piece, right? That a lot of climate activism is a pastime for the wealthy elite or for the children of the wealthy elite. Maybe that's an even better way to put it. Many of those who are represented in culture, in the media, or kind of to put it in a more general term, those who currently gather in Davos, right? This is exactly kind of the group of people that has certain issues on top of their agenda because it satisfies their own feeling of virtue, their own feeling of importance. But unfortunately, them pursuing their own goals can have devastating effects on those on the lower end of the, whether it's socioeconomically or planet-wide, right? I mean, we talked about this in the past. A lot of the climate policy is conducted on the shoulders of either slave labor in China or child labor in Africa. So there's a very dark side to this, which gets most of the time ignored because it doesn't fit the narrative.
Right. So pulling out these rare earth minerals that, of course, go into the solar panels, the wind turbines, and all of these things that then have no recycling programs. And we don't ever hear about that side of the story, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's even more ironic, just to give you two quick examples, because you mentioned the protests against coal mining in Germany where Greta Thunberg participated. To mine that specific area of land for coal was sanctioned by the German parliament. So this was decided by the German parliament, and the German Green Party is, of course, a member of the governing coalition. And you had this absurd scenario where the same members of parliament of the Green Party who voted for coal mining were then a week later in this German village of Lützerath to protest the very coal mining they approved a few days earlier. Right? That shows you that a lot of this truly is show. And the second example is we know there are, for example, great lithium reserves in the U.S. state of Maine, very close to a very, you know, fancy, swanky ski resort, where we can assume that many people who can afford to ski there are going to drive a Tesla or any other electric vehicle. But the state of Maine, immediately after they found those reserves, has made a law that lithium mining in the state of Maine will be illegal. Right? And this shows you exactly what's going on. So it's climate virtue for me and lithium mining, rare earth mining for thee.
Right. No, great point. Why do you think they're doing this? Why is the bourgeoisie, are they just bored? And they have nothing else to do? Why do you think that these elites are doing this?
I think that's really the matter that we have to discuss in more detail, that this is not a technical question or a scientific question. This is really a matter of many of those people in power or close to those in power, like, for example, the WF, Klaus Schwab and others, right? That they found their meaning, their identity, their reason of existence, if you want, in this, as they call it themselves, right? I mean, Klaus Schwab's book is literally titled The Great Reset, right? This idea we have to remake the world at all cost, or to put it differently, not at all cost for them, but very much at all cost for everybody else. I mean, there was this very, you know, ironic story, and we hear this all the time, you know, about the number of private jets that flew into Switzerland, and that apparently escort services had to recruit, you know, new employees, so to speak, to satisfy the extreme demand for sex workers during the time in Davos. So it really has this kind of pre-French revolutionary feeling a little bit, right, where you have this luxuriously living elite that at the same time wants to tell people that, you can't drive your car. You know, you want to visit somebody using a plane because they live further away. Maybe you shouldn't do this. And I think there's a lot or a huge part of this is, you know, you yourself want to live a swanky lifestyle without feeling bad about it. So what you do is you try to ban others from doing it. But this is really a cultural phenomenon, I would argue, much more than a technical phenomenon, or even has anything particularly to do with the climate, because we all know that climate change will be mostly affected in India, in China, and other parts of the world. It's not going to be decided in a coal mine in Germany or in a, you know, electric vehicles in France. That's not going to be the front where this is going to be decided.
And a lot of the pricing now we're seeing is devastating for so many small businesses, for so many average people. Of course, the data, I've covered this on the show last week, the data for a kilowatt hour of electricity, the pricing has surged. Of course, natural gas pricing has surged. Across the board, we're seeing it. Now, Europe, of course, is getting hit with this massive cold snap. So now people are really firing up their heaters in order to stay warm. And so those elites won't feel any of it. They're going to be fine. They'll absorb all of those costs, but it'll be the little people, right? It'll be the proletariat, of course, that can't afford to even turn up their thermostat, put on an extra sweater, they're told to do that. And so this is going to adversely affect them, not the elite.
It's even more absurd. I mean, let's assume, and that's fine by me, like let's assume that we disagree with the methods, but we agree with the goals of, you know, the Greta Thunbergs of the world. Now, if we look at the numbers, it's absolutely clear that the richer people get, the wealthier they get, the more they care about the climate, right? The more they care about environmental issues. So if they would be smart, or if it would really be about the climate and the environment, they would say, let's try to get as many people as possible, as rich as possible, as quickly as possible, because then they're going to care even more about the issues that we care about. But that's not what they do. They do exactly the opposite, right? They say, well, you know, people, then they can't afford certain things, right? Certain lifestyles. We have to eat less meat. We have to travel less. As you said before, right, we have to get used to the fact that you can't take, to use one recent example, you can't take a hot shower every day. But this is not how you're going to convince people of your agenda. But that's my point. I don't think that the agenda really is what motivates them. I would even go so far to say, if we would go, you know, to the kind of the most outspoken activists and say, so here we have a magic button, and if we hit this magic button, right, we can freeze global climate, you know, below 1.5 degrees. I would suspect that they would say, we cannot push that button, because even if then the climate problem is solved, there is still so much else we have to do, because the system per se is wrong. Capitalism itself has to be, you know, abandoned or changed. So this is really my suspicion, is it's more about a search for identity, which I can find also a little bit into this idea of a transnational identity, right? You identify with the globe and not your nation or your immediate region. And I think this is how we have to have this conversation more and more, that this is an ideology or a culture, if you want, right, that has very, very specific emotionally held goals or you know things they would they want to achieve, but it's more driven by religious fervor and a religious sentiment, and not by a problem-solving attitude. Because last point, if it would be problem-solving, there are many good news, right? The ozone layer apparently is healing itself over time. The Great Barrier Reef is in much better conditions than we were told it would be a couple of decades ago. So there's a lot of good stuff happening, right? That would kind of should motivate us to say, okay, what can we do to double down on the things that make these good things happen? But that's not their goal, right? It's the idea that you want to preach virtue. It's a little bit like, you know, a new kind of reformation with one difference, right? The early kind of the Martin Luther reformers, at least in many cases, they practiced what they preached. But what makes them worse at the moment is that they preach what you have to do differently while they themselves don't have to do it. And I think that makes it even worse.
No, hallelujah. That is absolutely spot on. And all of the good things that are happening right now, the Great Barrier Reef, polar bear populations. I mean,
oh yes,
the list is pretty endless right now, but they don't want you to know about that. They want you to suffer while they fly their private jets into Davos. Ralph, always great to see you. There's no one else we'd rather turn to for this this context here on this show. And as many eagle-eyed viewers who are watching our show right now will point out, they want to know about your Masters of the Universe figures back there. And someday you and I will have to compare action figures that I've got behind me and your He-Man figures back there.
It's for me, it anchors me, right? I mean, I always say that my interest in politics was awoken by the very idiosyncratic policies of Eternia and the competition between He-Man and Skeletor. But it's more like this, right? I think one of the things that, and this is another conversation I hope we're going to have someday, is of course we have in the past undermined so many sources of meaning, right? Family, religion, the nation, that it's understandable that particularly those who are most affected by this undermining have looked for different things, right? That now for them it's the environmental movement, it's the climate movement. And I think we need to appraise and appreciate the fact that people are looking for meaning in their life. And if we take away certain sources of meaning, they're going to try to find new ones. But the question is, what is the effect of these new sources of meaning? And I'm afraid that the direction which we're currently going, right, for many people will have very negative consequences. And this is worthwhile to point out and to, as much as we can, mobilize against it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Whether it's a woke political ideology, which becomes their new religion, or this climate activism, while ignoring how it actually hurts average people, and they wrap themselves in this. Great piece.
Can I just one quick sentence?
Yeah.
And they're all connected, right? If you look at how many of these activists talk now, they all talk about, well, climate is also a problem of decolonization, right? It's also a problem of capitalism. It's also a problem, a consequence of colonialism. So the woke language and the climate activist language is very similar because they are driven by the same motivation, right? It's the search for a source of meaning in life. So it was only a matter of time until those two overlap. And I think this is what we see at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Spot on. Ralph Schulhammer is his name. Read his new work. We'll have it linked up in the description below, the new piece that he just published in Newsweek. Thank you so much for your context on this. Ralph, great to see
Thanks,
you so
anytime.
Much.
Thank
happy,
you.
And happy new year to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you to you as well.
Thanks, Sean. And thanks to all of you, your comments here in the chat. You know, I'm watching him while doing, the, you know, have this interview. And it's like, so... This is just one piece of it, right?
Yeah.
The idea that this is like a religion for these people because they're bored. I mean,
and because society is highly secular. This is something that Michael Schellenberger writes about in his book San Francisco, is the absence of religion has created space for people to embrace woke policy as a replacement for something to cling to.
Yeah, they don't have God in their life. They don't have some meaning. So they cling to this, right? This climate policy or woke politics. So this is how they live their lives.
And they think that they are being increasingly accepting of all lifestyles, because a lot of times it is, of course, well-intentioned, but you don't think about then who you're punching down at.
Right. And this is what Alex Epstein writes about in his book, which is, When you have this zero impact policy plan, when you're like, you know, it's the impact policy framework, and so we can't touch the earth, and that's great for all these elites to say, we need to tread more lightly on the earth, great, that's nice for you in your multi-million dollar mansion to say that. But when that, what you're really saying is, hey, all of you folks that live in Africa that rely on hydrocarbons to live your life and power your hospitals, stop using that stuff because I don't like it. I want you to have less impact on the earth.
So to those people, I'll say, oh, are you going to unplug your toothbrush and right. your mini fridge?
No, you won't. They won't.
No, I'm not going to, Tesla. But I don't want you your, to have those things.
Stop flying your private jet, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. I think
your private jets.
I think part of the problem is
underground bunkers.
Yes.
Like, I remember when I was young, right? So it's like, this just proves further that propaganda works because I became militant about the green movement because they can easily convince you. And I kind of use the example, like, you always have new people coming on the internet every day that still don't even know how to like copy and paste. So you have people getting fresh propaganda every day. And so I became militant about that green movement. I was all CFL light bulbs and all this other stuff, but then it just started to fall apart for me because I saw the hypocrisy in it all. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm doing all this. So I think that like it starts out, people have the good intentions for a mission that they believe in because they do honestly feel like they're protecting the earth. But at some point, if it starts to fall apart, and then when it does, you have to embrace that it's changed and not keep going, which is the problem that, you know, I have with people that keep going, even when they have more information that proves it.
Not. Yeah, like I think when we walk along the beach, like none of us wants to throw a plastic bag, like put it in the trash can, right? Don't be an idiot, right?
Yeah, we've seen enough sea turtle pictures.
Right. So you don't need to do that.
Actually,
but at the end of the day, it's like, okay, but is it, are we talking, so, okay, don't throw that here in this and make a mess, throw it in the trash can. But are so many plastic bags killing our oceans? And the answer is actually no, it's not. It's actually fishing equipment that is falling off of boats that winds up in the ocean. It's not plastic bags. So you need to, you know, you need to understand these things and like dive deeper into the data on this. And I think you're right. A lot of this starts to unravel. Like, sure, treat the earth great. Like don't pollute it, right? Don't throw crap out your window when you're driving. And you know, we want a beautiful place to live in, right?
Or if you live in urban cities, don't poop on the sidewalk.
Right.
How about that?
Unlike San Francisco, which that's what they do there in San Francisco.
Michael Schellenberger, again, in Apocalypse Never, has an entire chapter about those turtle dying pictures or the turtles with the straws in their nose and how, you know, those are, yes, heartbreaking and gut-wrenching, but when you have to look into the actual incidence of plastic, and there are studies that have done that. So we can't sort of just be like, oh, well, then nobody should use a plastic straw because of the internet video that I've seen when the move towards paper straws actually has a higher carbon emission.
You're right. So we see one video of a turtle with a straw up its nose, and then suddenly entire states have banned plastic straws.
And the data shows that the move to plastic bags has increased carbon emissions as well because paper bags have a higher footprint to produce.
Right. So now we move these stupid paper. I hate paper straws, by the way. They're the worst.
Yeah.
They make my, you know, that feeling when you like fingers on the chalkboard.
Yeah.
Just those touching my lips gives me that feeling. I cannot do paper straws.
Yeah. Where were we? We had like, a Starbucks lid that was made of that paper straw material recently. Where was that? And I was like, oh, that's a no. That's an absolute no.
It was in France. I think it was in France.
It was at the Starbucks in Toulouse.
Yeah. It was
that's
in France,
where it was.
Yeah. I'm like, what is going on here now?
It was the whole paper straw was the top, like what would normally be the plastic top. Have you seen those, Philip, David? No?
No.
We have metal straws are the big, the big thing is bars in Portland have metal straws that they like wash then. So that it's like everybody just has reusable metal straws, like spoons, basically.
Mm. Yeah, I have those. I've had those for my kids.
Yeah, I have one in my car.
Yeah. Anyway, stay away from those paper straws. They're the worst. They break down after a few seconds. You know, like, and if you want to savor your drink, like if you got a frou-frou drink with some whipped cream or something on it, you want to like savor it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then like halfway through the drink, the damn thing's broken down.
Yep. I'm not
ridiculous.
For this.
How meta would it be to shoot spitwads through them, though, you know?
I used to do that in high school. Spitballs.
They could turn into a spitball on their own.
I was an expert.
Exactly.
I used to get the plastic straws from the lunch ladies and bring them. And then I was an expert at the spitball. You got to get them real small.
That's gross. I don't want to hear about that.
The one time across the room, right on.
What did I just say?
Right on Brett's forehead. Bonk.
Can we mute him?
Bonk. It stuck right there as the teacher was calling on him.
I'm not going to tell you again.
You're in the room with him. I can't mute him. in your room. I can mute him to the stream, but you'll still hear him.
Funny story, though.
Instead of what you want, you'd be the only one.
Okay, then I'm just going to do this.
Hold on, one other funny story. So about that, it was fourth grade chemistry class, and Chuck Dvorak, who was the school quarterback, friend of mine, Chuck Dvorak, we sat at the sarcastic table. So he was facing the hallway, and I was facing this way. He was facing the hallway. He had a spitball thing ready to go to fire at me or somebody else. And then he did. And just at the, he had the worst luck. And he was the quarterback. The moment he did this, the high school principal walks right by the door, right as he's firing the spitball. And then he was benched. He wasn't able to play in the next game because of that.
I'm going to crush some skulls.
It was pretty funny. Bad luck.
You know what that's from? Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, yeah. All right. We got more news to get to. We're going to talk about these gas stoves. It goes perfectly with the story we were just talking about on the climate. And not surprisingly, of course, the World Economic Forum is behind this gas stove ban, one of the big partners in that. So we're going to talk about what this actually means, what's the science behind it. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo, because right now they are giving away, and by the way, take a look at their beautiful new website, all updated. You can go to redacted.inc/Moomoo and trade like a pro with Moomoo, and they've just added a new feature at Moomoo, which is free earnings calendar built in, which is amazing. So if you're watching different companies that you want to invest in, different commodities companies, different gold companies, different gold producers, silver producers, uranium producers like I invest in, the people that pull the things out of the ground that we need every day to power our lives, well, you can now look at their free earnings calendar. So you can see when these companies are going to announce their earnings. It used to be, it was crazy. Like, you would literally have to rely on a Facebook group to get this information before. So now they've just added it in, totally free. And when you open an account, you get 15 free stocks when you make your initial deposit in the account. You get a free stock for opening the account, and then you get these additional free stocks as you make your initial deposit in the account. That's 15 free stocks. Just go to redacted.inc/Moomoo right now to get 15 free stocks valued up to $30,000. And you can trade like a pro with Moomoo. I love their apps. It's my favorite way to set alerts and get my news. I get alerts going on throughout the day to see what's happening in the broader economy. All of it. And it's totally free. It's a great app on Apple, on Android, on your Mac, or your PC. Again, check it out, redacted.inc/Moomoo, to get 15 free stocks and all of their new bells and whistles in their app. So our thanks to them. All right, it is time, folks. Let's move over to Rumble, because we want to do, because we love Rumble and we want to show them some love. So all of you guys right now, come on over to our Rumble channel. Hopefully you'll join us there. Just go to rumble.com/redacted. I saw a bunch of people saying, we really, really hope you guys will move over fully to Rumble. And we're trying to, and we're going to get there, hopefully. That's the goal. Maybe by the, a few more months, we probably want to get there. But again, a censorship-free platform, and we're able to do all these stories on Rumble that we can't do on YouTube. So come on over right now. We're going to end the stream on YouTube. So come on over to rumble.com/redacted and be sure you're subscribed there, and you can watch the stream. We'll continue live right there on Rumble.
All right. Bye, YouTubers. We appreciate you. We'll see you tomorrow if we don't see you right now on Rumble.
That's right.
All right. Are you ready to do you have gas, Clayton?
I have gas pains.
Okay.
I have pains in my gas.
Time to talk about gas. Boys, do you have gas?
Do you guys have gas?
Oh, my gosh. Do I have some words to say on this one?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay.
Words. Do you have a...
I'm all electric here.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Yeah. Well, hold your powder. So let's get into some of the data on this. Go ahead.
What makes
sense? If it makes you feel better, I did turn on, I was using my oven, and I had some groceries sitting up on the top of the stove, and I turned on the oven to preheat it while I was putting groceries away, and it melted a plastic bag all over one of the burners. So
it's the same
presumed toxicity of a gas stove.
How'd you get that off?
Oh, that's a pain. How'd you scrape that off?
I didn't. I'm just going to replace it, but I haven't got around to it yet.
Oh, jeez. That's not good. I'm sorry to hear that. I just don't use
that burner. That's the bad burner.
Okay.
that's the plastic burner.
All right. Well, the battle over gas stoves is coming to a boil.
Oh.
Get it?
I get it.
This issue has been brewing, but we've put it on the back burner.
Do you have a sad
trombone? Here at Redacted.
Do you have a sad trombone sound effect?
So this pot is stewing, and we're going to talk about it. Okay. That's all. That's all I got for now.
No more bad puns.
Okay. So here's how the controversy started, if you don't know it already. It is a big American controversy at this moment, but it does seem to be spreading into other Western nations. So last week, the head of the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission told Bloomberg that a ban on gas stoves is being considered in order to, quote, address the pollution, which can cause health and respiratory problems. This caused an freak out online for people who say they will never, ever, ever give up their gas stoves. I, too, love cooking on gas stoves, but I'm willing to be objective about this because when we moved to Europe, we realized that a lot of people don't use gas because it's so expensive. And so most people here in Portugal just use electric stoves, and that's your, you can have a gas line run in, but it's not common. So we do have an electric stove now. An induction stove. I have learned to love it. But let's look at the studies about gas stoves. Well, first we'll look at the studies and then we'll talk about your preferences because those are important too.
Okay.
So gas stoves has been linked to all manner of indoor toxins because you are, of course, burning fuel inside of your house. Here's what Bloomberg has to say. Bloomberg tells us that the EPA and the World Health Organization have said that they are unsafe and they are linked to respiratory illnesses, cardiovascular problems, cancer, and other health conditions. According to reports by groups such as the Institute for Policy Integrity and the American Chemical Society, Consumer Reports in October urged customers planning to buy a new range to consider going electric after tests conducted by the group found high levels of nitrogen oxide gases from gas stoves. And in fact, new peer-reviewed research published just last month in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health found that more than 12% of current childhood asthma cases in the U.S. can be attributed to gas stove use. Now, even climate researcher Bjorn Lundberg, who normally calls bullshit on mainstream media's environmental cause of the day, does in fact agree that indoor cooking is a health hazard. And he is the one, again, who normally debunks environmental claims that the media latches onto. Here's what he says in his book, False Alarm. He says, one of the deadliest environmental problems today is indoor air pollution, produced almost entirely because the world's poorest 2.8 billion people are forced to cook and heat their houses by burning dirty fuels like wood, dung, and cardboard. He does not mention gas, but he does say that cooking with fire from these things is bad.
Yeah, but these are totally different. Wood, dung. First of all, I'm thinking about moving our house to a dung stove.
Just
because if I want to piss off my kids,
gather it.
No, my kids. I'm going to make them those lazy sons of. They're going to go out and they're going to go out and get some dung. Go out to the chicken coop and grab dung, or go out to the dog pen or the cow.
Who's on dung duty?
We wouldn't be too far from that, because remember the interview I did with the guy who wrote Unquenchable? He taught about compost toilets.
Yeah.
So let's do it. We could do something kind of like that.
When we piss off our kids.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea, the dung duty. Like, put them on dung duty.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yes, they pissed me off today, so this, you're on to something.
They're going to wake up tomorrow, they're going to rue the day. Oh,
they're on your shit list?
Yeah, they're on my shit list.
They literally are on my shit list.
Guess what, Miles?
Okay, let's get back to the book. He says, regarding this, breathing this foul pollution, again, from cooking indoors from wood, dung, and cardboard, not gas, is equivalent to smoking two packs of cigarettes each day, and women and children are the worst offended.
Affected.
When people emerge from poverty, they turn to cleaner gas or electricity as fuel sources. Since 1990, the risk from indoor air pollution has dropped by 58%, mostly because of the increased GDP per person in the developing world.
So they turn to cleaner gas or electricity.
As people get wealthier, they choose this on their own.
And that's what Ralph Schulhammer just said on our show.
That's what the data shows, too. So his point here is that... You don't? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, we say they choose it on their own, but if you look at people that are building these big houses, these $5,000 to $50,000 stoves, have you ever seen a mansion with an electric stove in it? Like, chefs don't use electric, right? So it's like they...
In Europe, they mostly have, yeah, they have electric stoves.
Do they really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
The nicest houses in Europe will mostly have electric stoves. Because, go ahead.
So I was going to say, a lot of people in our chat are saying they run restaurants here, and there's no way gas for restaurants, like, that you can't take away, like, someone just said we can't run our restaurant on electric. We would maybe like to, but we can't.
Cow dung? Can you run it on cow dung?
No, but a lot of chefs here, a lot of restaurant owners in our chat saying they have to run it on gas.
And you think of those Chinese walks that have, I don't know the technical term of them, but it's like, they call it the airplane jet, because it's literally just like, that's what a walk needs. A real walk needs one of those gas, you know, like what have you.
Like a F-16.
Like a jet burner.
Yeah.
And most of those really expensive stoves that we're talking about, when people become wealthier and they choose a stove based on their habits and their finances and can I afford the gas, have upgraded ranges that are pulling a lot of those toxins out of the air as well. So again, his point here is that market conditions can take care of that. And the bigger concern is not whether or not wealthy people have gas stoves. It's whether or not poor people have dung stoves.
Right.
This is the issue, right? Wood and dung and cardboard stoves. So can we upgrade those people? No, we've got to turn to like wealthy nations, you know.
No. So here's what we do. And again, this is what we do with the poor countries. We're asking them to skip industrialization, right? So they're cooking with dung. And then as we evolved, right, in first world countries, they evolved and started moving from wood stoves, moving to cleaner gas, moving to electricity, upgrading their burning mechanisms inside the homes, ventilation systems, etc. But in Africa and sub-Saharan Africa and other parts of the world that don't have access to this, what we're asking them to do is skip those steps and go right to solar panels.
Like, yeah.
Go right to solar panels and to heat your infrastructure, and that's a total farce.
Right.
And now, we'll subsidize you. We'll give you a little bit of money back at the end of the year for your purchase.
Yeah. This made me think of the Danish, because Denmark burns more candles per head than anywhere else in Europe. So I just want to present you with this little anecdote. Each Dane burns around 13 pounds of candle wax per year. To put that in contrast, each Dane consumes only 6.5 pounds of bacon. So they're using twice as many candles as bacon. It's just their thing. Gets dark there by 3 p.m. at some times of the year. Candles are the thing they collectively value for their, I'm going to say this word wrong, I think it's hygge. This comes from a book called The Little Book of Hygge. It's a Danish word that really doesn't have an English equivalent. It's like things that make you feel warm and cozy and loved and safe.
I love basically this idea.
It's like warm socks or an intimate dinner with friends or Netflix and chill. It's like all of those things are hygge. Now, the Danish, though, know that candles create air pollution. From this book, it says hygge, or hygge light, as the Danes may be. There is one serious drawback to being crazy about candles is soot. Studies show that lighting just one candle fills the air with more microparticles than traffic in a busy street. A study undertaken by the Danish Building Research Institute showed that candles shed more particles indoor than either cigarettes or cooking. Despite Denmark being a highly regulated country, we have yet to see a warning label on candles because nobody messes with the hygge fanatics. There is now a growing awareness among Danes of the importance of airing out a room after burning candles. Nevertheless, despite the health implications, Danes continue to consume candles in obscene quantities. So the Danish have decided that this is a cultural value and they take collective responsibility for it. We know it. We love it. Don't try to regulate it. So should we follow in the West this model and say, okay, we know that there's a risk with gas stoves. There is science behind it, but certain people want to accept that risk and maybe upgrade their ventilation. And we don't need regulation. What do you
think? Yeah, I think that
Is this hygge the way we should go?
Yes, exactly. Do it yourself. Like, we have someone in the chat, Drablos says, we have a wood-burning stove. Drablos, I think that's how you pronounce your screen name, Drablos. We have a wood-burning stove. We have no problem with the indoor air. I don't believe this research. Well, first of all, I would just say maybe there's a way, I don't know how you could test indoor air quality. Like I would certainly, there's very easy, like simple electronic devices you can get to measure indoor air quality.
Well, we burn wood too, but behind a glass stove.
We use what's called in Portugal a recuperador. No.
Yeah.
And it blocks the particles from coming out, but you get all the heat from it. And it actually has like, it's fantastic. And it gets so warm and nice and you still
I'm talking about people who cook, you know, in small, poorly ventilated places with wood and cardboard and dung, not necessarily a wood burning stove that's designed to pull some of the, this is for you to do research on, you know, the air quality in your house and the ventilation system in your house. Is it, or it's for the government. Like these are two different platforms that I'm presenting you here.
Right. And let's look also at the motivation, because at the end of the day, they, you know, all of the people in the World Economic Forum. And again, we just have this revelation over the past 48 hours or so that a partner with the World Economic Forum is behind this new push and this new research and this push to remove these gas stoves. Right. And so you have the World Health Organization, which we also know is tied to them. Right. So you have the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization. I mean, how many more examples of being in cahoots do you need for driving this climate agenda to get us to get away from natural gas and onto solar and wind energy?
Now, leave it to Libs. Go ahead.
Real quick. It reminds me of like there was a time when the Waldorf Astoria lobbied Congress because they wanted to make mandatory these huge sprinkler systems that would be like required for hotels and things like that. So that passed and instantly put out of business mom and pop hotels that could not afford to retrofit their sprinkler systems to abide by those laws. So it's almost like they're coming up with something. They're like, what could we do to make people more dependent on us? And it's like, if they control the power grid, because they're pushing electric cars, they're pushing electric stoves, like why is everything being pushed electric now when there's such a demand for gas? They're going to take away what, our gas fireplaces, our gas heaters, our water heaters and stuff too. That's all going to have to be electric. So it's like part of the conversation is against electric, against gas, but part of it is still for gas. So it's like, there that just kind of tells you there has to be some agenda to this other than what they're saying.
Right. And electric and also, energy requires a lot of water, which is also a resource that we should be measuring. And in large part in the United States, there isn't a collective like let's all get together. I mean, wells are not even regulated. You can just drill wherever you want in the United States. And so no one's thinking about, are we going to have enough water to run this electricity? That research is just not done. Again, we did an interview last year with an author of a book called Unquenchable, which I really recommend that you read, even though it's over 10 years old. I can't think of his name at this point. But, you know, there's a lot that goes into delivering electricity for everybody's car, for everybody's stoves, for everybody's heat. So if we all just decided to go off gas at this point, the grid wouldn't be able to handle it.
Right.
It just simply wouldn't. Now, most of the liberal politicians who were, getting involved in conversations about this on Twitter and trying to say, hey, you know, but your gas stove's going to kill you, so shut up and get in line, were, in fact, people who had posted photos of themselves
during
cooking
the holidays
with gas over the holidays. Here you have the First Lady Jill Biden. You have Kamala Harris. You have AOC. And you have Elizabeth Warren all showing off their beautiful gas ranges.
Can I defend AOC really quick? Because she did an Instagram Live and said that she rents, so it's not her fault. So
oh, yes, she did say that.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a renter. So.
But all the rest of them, Kamala Harris, they're all cooking with gas. They're all making their holiday meals, cooking with gas stoves. But again, what's good for you? You know, what is it? What did Ralph say?
Gas for me, but not for thee.
Yeah, gas for me, but not for thee.
And now we come to the sort of hidden agenda part here, because one eagle-eyed Twitter user points out that some of this research that these politicians are using about gas stoves being bad for you was done by a company called Rocky Mountain Institute, and they happen to be a partner of the World Economic Forum. Take a look. Here is their page on the World Economic Forum. And then the next slide over shows you their attribution of this study showing that gas stoves are harmful for child asthma. So, you know, the World Health, the World Economic Forum does in fact push for total elimination of carbon emissions at any cost, even the lives of the poorest among us. So there is something inherently to mistrust about this research about breathing in fumes from indoor fires, and how that spans decades. So you can put a pin in that. I don't think it's nothing. I think it's worth looking into. Absolutely. If you have a gas stove, you should give it some thought in regard to the health of your family. But again, I present you the Dutch hygge and the idea of taking personal responsibility instead of handing over power to global elites.
Yeah, like for instance, yeah, exactly. Check your own indoor air quality. If you have like a daughter that like suffers from asthma and you find out like, okay, let's test this. Maybe it's affecting our daughter, right? Because you don't have proper ventilation or something. Like that's on you to make a decision about. Make a decision about, we're going to move to an electric stove, mm-hmm. right? Because that's going to be better for our daughter. It's kind of the same thing as
like, we're going to get a cat, but we can't because our daughter's allergic, yes. So you just don't get a cat.
Like, yes, exactly. Right. So like my sister growing up was allergic to Christmas trees. Like there was something in the, I don't know, the fur, whatever it was.
I'm allergic to Christmas.
She's allergic to Yule.
She was allergic to the Yule log. And so we ended up having to get like an artificial tree because she would just like sneeze like crazy. And so we didn't have, so you just make these, you make these changes in your family. But do we need the World Economic Forum telling us how to live our lives with this?
Or banning Christmas trees.
Or banning Christmas trees altogether. Yeah, they're going to tell us that that's next. So
I am going to go with this I'm allergic to Christmas bit next year.
Okay.
Because I think that I am.
You are. You're just you're a Grinch.
I am. Yeah. I'm happy to see it in my rearview mirror.
Well, that's going to do it.
Sorry. No, I didn't want to interrupt Natalie because she was on a roll, but I wanted to come back to the hygge.
Yeah.
You said like it's cozy, like warm socks or like a fireplace and then Netflix and chill.
I know.
And that just, I absolutely, I was like, okay, yeah, we're getting real cozy in that.
Like I just, that's like what the young kids say, right? Netflix and chill.
I love this idea of hygge. When we learned, we were considering, before we decided to move to Portugal, we were thinking about like, well, where in the world would we want to live for our kids and give a better life? And like, of course, you know, Denmark has the highest happiness markers and everything. We started seriously like looking at it, right? I even called real estate people I was talking to. And just looking into it and then realize, okay, it gets dark at like 3 o'clock. And but then we understood this idea of hygge. And I'm like, I love that idea that you can't have, is it more than six people,
yes.
over for a dinner party then violates the hygge rules like
yeah.
in Danish. Like, no, six is like where you can have good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
More than that, though, and then it's not, it violates hygge rules.
Yeah.
And not having a lot of lights, but having like candlelight and a fireplace. And I'm like, I love that coziness.
Yeah.
I love
it's
that.
A whole vibe. I read I a whole that. Book about it. That you're feel free to put in the chat what makes you feel hygge. Like it has to be relaxing. It, you know, it has to be cozy and soft and warm. It could be your dog. It
could be a cat.
It could be a
I
cat.
I used to sit and put candles around the bathtub, sit in the bathtub with just candles and listen to Enya. That was my hygge.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody, though. I don't want that getting out.
Hippie.
All right. I don't think they mentioned hippie. The bath in the book, but I suppose.
Yeah, like sitting by a fire reading a good book.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's hygge. Anyway, I saw a commercial. A few, like last year, they had a commercial out for it, and it was like, and it put the word up on the screen, and it had like the example of it. And I don't know if it was like
an Amazon commercial. Oh. It was like, order me these things. I know, so commercialized, right? But it's a really great concept that
yeah.
I learned a lot from it.
So anyway, that's going to do it for Redacted. Please subscribe to the channel. We really, really appreciate it here. We're at 180,000 subscribers here on Rumble. We'd love to get up to 200,000. That would be really, really nice. Closing in and trying to beat YouTube, right? I think what are we on YouTube? We're at 1.7 million?
We're pushing 1.7, yep.
1.7 million. So we're 180,000 subscribers here on Rumble. So maybe if we get there, we can eclipse YouTube. That would be super awesome. So please subscribe. subscribe to us there on Rumble. Just click the little follow button. And you can also join our community by hitting that big red join button if you'd like to support independent journalism. So thank you so much. We're back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We've got some great guests lined up for you tomorrow. Plus, we're going to be deep diving some of these WEF panels that some unbelievable things were said this afternoon. We'll have that and more tomorrow. We'll see you at 4 p.m.